In a few minutes, we're going to be singing what is a favorite hymn of mine, We Three Kings. It's based on a long-standing Christian tradition. However, that first line is not based in any way on the biblical story. The Bible does not say there were three visitors. It says there were three gifts. It never says how many visitors there are. And the Bible does not call them kings. The Bible calls them magoi, from which we get magi, which means we don't even know if they were all wise men. There could have been women among them. So, what do we know about these strangers who visit? First of all, we know that they're not Jewish. They're Gentiles. They have come from a completely different religion, probably Zoroastrianism. But they have come to the God of Israel, born into the flesh, in this child that they're seeking. The second thing we know about them is that once they've been warned that going back to Herod would endanger the child's life, they return home by another road. More broadly speaking, none of us encounters the love of God in the flesh and go home by the same road we came. We are all changed by that encounter. We are all called to go home by another road. So today, instead of dealing with three wise men, I want to tell you the story of three wise women. Now, I know there weren't just three, but that's all I've got time for. Okay? The first story is a cautionary tale. We don't know when Mary Dyer was born, but we know exactly when she died. She was hanged by the neck until dead on June 1st, 1660, for criticizing the preacher. That's the cautionary part. Actually, there's more to the story than that. Mary Dyer and her husband William came to the Massachusetts Bay Colony as Puritans. But the Puritan version of Christianity was way too restrictive for Mary and way too restrictive for another woman named Anne Hutchinson. They got together and they actually talked about the sermons, and believe it or not, they disagreed with some of the things that the preacher said. I know that's hard to imagine. And they were vocal about it. And so they had to leave. In fact, they left with a man named Roger Williams, who was seeking a place where people could worship God, not within the restriction of one interpretation, but could worship God in any way they felt led. In fact, when Roger Williams went to England to get a charter for his new colony, the Hutchinsons and the Dyers went with him. While she was in England, Mary Dyer developed a kinship with the Quakers. Now, both the Puritans and the Anglicans thought the Quakers were pretty suspicious. They didn't have visible sacraments. They didn't have ordained ministers. When they came together for worship, they sat in silence until the Spirit moved one of them, and it wasn't the same one every week the way it is with us. So when she came back, she was not simply in disagreement with her Puritan background. She was a Quaker. She went to Boston, where she had been told not to return. She was immediately imprisoned. She was sentenced to death. She was placed on the gallows. And it was only through the pleading of her husband and children that they changed the sentence, because her husband promised that she would never return to Boston. Interestingly enough, she didn't make that promise. So it wasn't but a couple of years later that she and some friends went to visit other Quaker friends who had been imprisoned in Boston, and this time there was no reprieve. On June 1st, 1660, Mary Dyer, a Christian, was hanged by a group of other Christians simply because they had a different interpretation of what it means to be Christian. You see, once Mary Dyer moved beyond the structures of her original understanding, once she encountered the living Christ in other people, she couldn't go home but the same road. Her road led through death. Story number two. Jane Addams could have been a well-heeled Victorian matron. She was born in Cedarville, Illinois. Her father was an attorney who had been part of the state legislature. They were nominally Presbyterian, nominally religious. She went away to Rockford College, a Christian school. She had not been baptized, and so the pressure was on for her to be baptized before she graduated from college. But you see, Jane didn't think it was appropriate to be baptized because somebody else wanted you to. She didn't think it was appropriate to be baptized just because other people were doing it. She thought that you needed an encounter with the living God. It didn't have to be dramatic, but it needed to be something that would be life-changing before you decided you wanted to be baptized. And so she graduated from Rockford College unbaptized. She entered the Women's Medical School of Philadelphia, but had to drop out. As a youngster, she had curvature of the spine, and the pain became too much for her to continue. Although she did travel, her parents were well off enough. They sent her to Europe. She went to Rome. She went to London. And in London, she happened across a place called Toynbee House. It was in the Whitechapel area of London, which was an area stricken with poverty, filled with immigrants. And she saw how Toynbee House provided services for the people in the surrounding neighborhoods. And she had an encounter with the living light of Christ and asked the question, why can't this happen back home? So when she got back, she went to Chicago, bought an old mansion, Hull House, and with the help of a number of friends, started to provide those services to the folks in those neighborhoods surrounding Hull House. Many of them were immigrants. Chicago was a huge city of immigrants. Even when I was there in the 70s, there were Czech language papers, Polish language papers, Italian language papers published still. She had an interesting take on the immigrants. She thought that the children from other countries were being encouraged to give up their native language too quickly and their native customs too quickly. She knew they would have to learn English. She knew they would have to learn how to fit in. But you see, her idea was that all of these differences were gifts, not liabilities. Very different from the way we think of it today. So after many, many years at Hull House, she became quite well known. She had two really remarkable things happen for her later in her life. She opposed the entry of the United States into World War I, and so had her membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution rescinded. She was kicked out. 20 years later, she was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace. You see, she had encountered the living light of God, and she could not go back home by the same road. Story number three. Evelyn Underhill was born in a nominally Anglican family. In fact, they were pretty much non-participants. Oh, she was baptized because that's what you did. And she was sent to boarding school, and she was confirmed because that's what you did. But they weren't church attenders. They weren't all that involved at all. Then, after she graduated from King's College for Women in London, she began to travel, and she began to encounter some of the Catholic mystics, the mystical writers. And she was quite interested with the idea that you could actually experience the presence of God in a palpable way. And that using certain practices, you could experience that presence again and again and again and again. And so she started reading these Catholic spiritual writers. She started practicing some of those practices. In fact, at one point, she thought about converting to Catholicism. Interestingly enough, the person who talked her out of it was a Catholic philosopher and theologian, Baron Friedrich von Hugel, who was also a writer on spiritual things. He said, go back to your own tradition and share what you've learned with them. Share what you've learned with the folks you know. So she did that. She wrote 30 books in the intervening years between that time and her death. One of those books, published in 1911, is simply called Mysticism. In the mid-1970s, when I took a course, which was the only course I could find in the seminary, maybe in any seminary that I knew of, that dealt with what we today call spirituality, we used Evelyn Underhill's book, Mysticism, as our text. It was one of the few things that was still around that dealt with spirituality. Now, today, spirituality is the talk of Christianity. You know, it's spiritual formation, spiritual practices. Not so then. But Evelyn Underhill is the mother of that movement. She didn't have a dramatic encounter, but she had a day-to-day walk with the light of God's love in the flesh, and she could not return by the same road. In fact, her daily practice was to spend an hour in prayer. Of course, she wrote. She tried to practice the presence of God in the spirit of Brother Lawrence of the Resurrection, sensing that God was present in everything, even the most ordinary things. Brother Lawrence writes that when he is washing the dishes after the other brothers eat, he finds those utensils as sacred as the utensils used on the altar. God is present even in washing the dishes. And then she each day went to serve the poor. And sometimes she could help them in material ways, but even when she couldn't meet their needs in material ways, she was present with them. She developed a relationship with them, sharing God's love through her very presence. Now, these are just three. We could go on and on and on and on. Wise women and wise men who have had an encounter with the living light and love of God and have never been the same. My prayer for you this year is that if you have not, you will have that encounter. And when you have that encounter, you won't just leave it at one time, but you will seek to experience that again and again and again. And that you will never be able to return to where you were by the same road. Thanks be to God.